A little bit unexpectedly to me, when I was dwelling with this text about the people of Israel, I started thinking about the movie Inside Out. I'm sure many of you have seen this Pixar movie from about 10 years ago. There's a new one, but it's the first one that was coming to mind. I haven't seen that new one yet. Much of the story takes place in the brain, or maybe more accurately, inside the emotional life of an 11-year-old girl. And the main characters, other than Riley, the girl herself, are disgust and fear and sadness and anger and joy. And events collide to make joy and sadness, the character's joy and sadness, go missing from the command center of Riley's consciousness and emotional life. Until now, in Riley's life, joy had been the leader. She's exuberant and she's confident and she's running the show. She's the one who sort of governs the other emotions. And in her absence, we see those other emotions, disgust and anger and fear, fumbling to help Riley at how to help Riley figure out how to live in this new unknown place. The context is that Riley has just moved to a new city. And this upheaval, the absence of joy, causes all these other emotions to try running things. And that causes her to lash out, to isolate herself, to stop playing hockey, which she has always loved and been good at, and ultimately she runs away. None of the emotions in this movie are called anxiety. None of them have that as their name, but it is what Riley's character is experiencing. And these changes in routine, changes in expectation, in the usual systems that govern our lives, those provoke anxiety within us. None of those characters is called anxiety. None of the emotions is called anxiety. But it's also what each of the emotions, disgust and fear and sadness and, or disgust and fear and anger, and even sadness and joy as they try to find their way back home. It's what all of them are experiencing. When joy is not there to manage this center, this emotional center, to offer direction, she's the one to whom and through him, through whom all of those characters direct their energy. She's the one who mediates everything. And all of a sudden that energy is directed in all different directions. So as weird as it sounds, that is the thing that came to mind for me as I was dwelling with the story of the people of Israel. And the other thing that I was thinking about was what I've been learning and begun to observe myself in group and family systems. In a family or in any group, we have routines, we have roles, and we develop patterns of behavior and expectation for ourselves and for others. And what can happen when one person is taken out of that system, when they're no longer a part of it for whatever reason, then we have to sort of shift the way that we typically, what the way those patterns typically work. And all of the people who remain in that system, we're compelled then to shift how we function within it. And anxiety starts bouncing all over the place. Sometimes leading everyone to increase our ability to function well. And sometimes, at least initially, or especially initially, and especially when the person who's no longer in the system anymore has been a leader or a manager, or we might say in family systems terminology, has been an overfunctioner, there's a huge then shift in energy toward other people. And that anxiety gets directed to other people or into other activities. So, for example, say a parent who's always been the primary caregiver in a household gets a job, and then that shifts the way they function in the household. Or an older sibling goes away to college. Or the aunt who's always coordinated family gatherings and get-togethers declares that she is hanging up her apron. That really can heighten the anxiety within a system. And it might not even look like anxiety, it might look like creative energy or decisiveness. It might also look like anger or outrage. It might look like addiction or a drastic change in character. So my hot take is, I think that's what's going on in the story of the golden calf. I think the Israelite people are one big family system. In many ways, that is literally true. They're all descended from those 12 sons of Israel. So that is what makes up the tribe, the literal family of Israel. And they have a covenant with God after escaping from Egypt, led by their sibling team of Moses and Miriam and Aaron. But it's Moses who's always been the dynamic and confident leader. Moses is the front man. So when Moses removes himself from the family, he's up there on the mountain. Who knows when he's coming back? He's always been the one to mediate between the people and God. Just like sometimes mom or dad is the mediator between the kids and the other parent. So what do the kids do when mom's not there anymore? They need a place to direct their anxiety and energy and their worship in this case. And so the people think, well, other nations use golden idols. Let's try that. And Aaron is there, left, trying to figure out what to do. And not being in used to being in this position of central leadership, he's also feeling anxious. So he says, okay, let's try it. Everybody, give me all your jewelry. Let's melt it down. We'll make a calf. But folks, he's thinking, okay, but even though we're making a calf, we're still worshiping the real God, okay? So there's a callback to like, we still want to be. Remember who we are and how we are supposed to function. And you can see this in his response in the text. He's using the word for the Lord or Yahweh. So that often is translated in our Bibles with like uppercase L-O-R-D, Lord. Well, the people are using the word Elohim or gods, so lowercase gods. And it can be confusing. Even some translators aren't exactly sure what to do with that because sometimes Yahweh, the Lord, is called Yahweh Elohim, or the Lord of Lords, or the God of Hosts. So it is a little confusing, but what it seems like is Aaron's trying to still call the people back to like remember what family we're a part of, and the people are just flailing all over the place. They're still getting used to this idea that Yahweh, their Lord, their God, is a God who is with them always. That God who brought them out of Egypt is the God who is still their God. And Moses has been their mediator, but God is still present with them. Their worship doesn't need to be directed toward another object or toward another person. They can simply offer their praise to God, the God of their liberation. There is plenty to be anxious about in today's world, obviously. There's plenty that in our personal experience of everyday life and loss and change in whatever systems that we're a part of, and in the world writ large, there is much to make us anxious. There's plenty that's taking the joy out of our systems. All of the injustices we're seeing and experiencing, and all of our other emotions are ready to take over. What God is calling us to is to direct that energy and action toward the God of covenant rather than into golden calves and idols. And there are also plenty of things that we idolize out of a need to send our thoughts and energy and anxiety somewhere, anywhere. When the world or our systems or our emotional life is feeling unstable, things that are shiny and beautiful but really don't offer any kind of consolation or relationship, whether that's media, overuse of alcohol or drugs, spending and consumption are so shiny and they call out to us because it seems to work. For the nation around us, for the people around us. For me, it's the endless scroll on the screen. I know someone for whom it took years to get out of debt when they were in emotional crisis. It was spending that met that need for them. It is so easy and accessible to go to those idols to quiet the turmoil in heart or mind. And my antidote to which I am various degrees of successful is to try to turn my heart and mind and intentions into something creative, something that connects me to the gifts that God put within me and that connect me to the divine, whether that's taking out my sketchbook and doing a little bit of painting, or my quilting supplies and using my fabric and needles. That's what connects me to my gifts and to God, to the God who created me. But maybe it's taking the dog for a walk, or listening to a book, or reading a book, or going out to the garden and getting our hands dirty. It's going to be a different thing for everybody that connects them, rather than to idols, toward the God who created us. God doesn't just long to make that connection. God doesn't just long for us to put away our idols. God is angry. God is outraged at the people of Israel. And Moses intercedes on their behalf. But we have direct access to God through Jesus. We have been brought close to God and have direct access whenever we need it. God is faithful. God is present. God will walk with us through the wilderness, just as God walked with the Israelite people. God will be present in all things, now and wherever we wander. May we bring ourselves before God in that spirit and put away the idols that we make for our anxiety. Amen.